But something to consider as we go through the day is, the question is, where does it hurt? We all have, I'm going to assume, we all have a piece of our life that at one time did, if it's maybe it's resolved now, or currently does, where it hurts. The part of us that we swallow heavy when we talk about it. It kind of gives you that little pain in the soul. Maybe it was upbringing, maybe it was a relationship, a loss of a loved one. Maybe it's remorse, guilt, embarrassment about something that happened, that thing. Now, as an alcoholic, I usually have a trailer full of those things when I get here. And those are the things I do not want to talk about, but they hurt. One of the holidays I hated for the longest time was Mother's Day. And it was full of self-pity and anger, jealousy. Because I'd see people talking about going to my mom's for Mother's Day. I remember hearing the news and saying, next to Thanksgiving, it's the most traveled holiday. Everyone wants to get home to Mama. And you go into the card store and have rows of, I love you, Mom. And I was angry with God. I was angry with her. I was just angry that I couldn't celebrate that day. And every once in a while, I would be talking to some friends, or I'd be in a meeting and someone talking about a relationship, and Mama would come up, and I would bristle with antagonism. I would get angry. And I wanted the room to say, but Pete, we know you've had a hard time. Please, God bless you, and throw money at me or something. Just pay homage to me because of the cross that I'm bearing. And there were other things that, where does it hurt when I would hear people talk about, sexual trauma growing up. It would remind me of what happened to me as a kid. And I wouldn't get angry so much, but I would feel like someone put a boot on my chest. We're going to talk about that. I wanted to forget about that. And it just went on and on and on. When my family moved from Brooklyn, New York, to a place called Staten Island, New York, and I would come home every couple of days just to, see what I can take and just check in. And I remember my kid brother was sitting on the steps one day, and it was a new neighborhood, and he had no friends. And I pulled out of the driveway and headed up the block onto the main thoroughfare to get onto the expressway. And I saw him just sitting there because his older brother wasn't hanging out with him because I was on my way to the city to get into the action. And that was one of the big things that, where does it hurt, was that. And so what I've done over the years with both of my brothers is spend time with them and give to them and talk about to my youngest brother about that day. You know what my brother told me? He's, I thought you didn't like me anymore. Because growing up, I was his idol. Because the drink was there, and my kid brother's here, and I'll make it up to him. Where does it hurt? That's the plaque on the soul that I need to get healed from. And when I say healed, I speak for myself, it isn't just about me feeling better. But part of healing, how could I be present knowing how I lived then? Part of my healing was going back, making the amends, spending time with those people, not to let me off the hook so I feel good about myself because I owe them. They deserve that. And somehow over the years, I got away from that. I haven't forgotten it. And it's a sad time in my life, but it doesn't own me anymore. So where does it hurt? What things am I keep pushing dirt on? In Alcoholics Anonymous, we hear people say, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm in recovery. Joe needs to get recovery. That kind of stuff. But something to consider, and I the consideration starts with me because I'm telling you, I don't want to sound like I'm immune from any of this stuff. Recovered, recovering, recover. Now, we all know what we're talking about when I say that. But does it really look like that I keep recovering, I have recovered, I recover all the things in my life that need to get uncovered? Through busy work, I'm doing a lot of step work. I'm glued to step work. I'm going through the steps again. I'm reading another book. I'm doing more steps, which is good. But what I'm doing it is trying to keep that other stuff away. Sponsoring, you know, 15, 20 guys. I got this assembly line of guys coming into my house because if it all stops, I might have to take a look at where it hurts. I'm working two jobs. I'm going A. I'm doing all this stuff. I need to stop and uncover, as Chuck Chamberlain said, discover and discard. But I'm too busy doing things to really take a look at it. And that's the process of recovery. Instead of just settling for status quo, I need to constantly be digging and uncovering things. And God will lead me to the things that need to get uncovered. He's not going to give me more than what I'm supposed to get. That's why I like to go through the steps over and over again. And I just want to share something from one of the books that I work with. Sometimes you read books and you get to a paragraph or a page and it just stops you, and for some reason that page or paragraph is talking to you. And I always share with folks, don't go any further. Stay there. Sit with it. Meditate on it. Because it's talking to the soul. The rest of the book was talking to the head. So he says this: the man who does not permit his spirit to be beaten down and upset by dryness and helplessness, but who lets God lead him peacefully through the wilderness and desires no other support or guidance than that of pure faith and trust in God alone, will be brought to the promised land. He will taste the peace and joy of union with God. He will see without seeing, have a habitual, comforting, obscure, and mysterious awareness of his God, present and acting in all events of life. The man who is not afraid to abandon all his spiritual progress into the hands of God, to put prayer, virtue, merit, grace, and all gifts in the keeping of him from whom they must all come, will quickly be led to peace in union with God. His peace will be all the sweeter because it is free of every care. I have experience going through this journey or on this journey and hitting the desert. I've hit the spiritual wall with about 8 or 9 years where I just can't taste the prayer. I'm not feeling prayer. I'm not feeling this God. I'm not even feeling the men I spy. I'm outside. There's something called dark night of the soul where we go home to our house or apartment where we've been for years, and it feels that we feel like we're foreigners in this place. Nothing is alive. And the tendency for someone like me is to try something different. Maybe this doesn't work. And what Merton's talking about is just throw more dependence upon this power, because what he's doing, as I have found out in actuality, is stripping, pruning the trees some more, ripping down some of the old structures to create, to get back to what he created right from the beginning. God will prune the tree over and over and over again, and things that I believe are meaningless, he will see meaning in them to me, and they have to go. My attachments to them. A good tree will bear good fruit, and people can eat from the vine, which is what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. A sick tree will bear sick fruit, and people will eat from that and get sick and die. What we can do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a youngin coming in here, or an old timer who's lost their way, and they come to me and they say, Peter or Mary or Joe, can you help me? What am I going to help them with? Untreated alcoholism. So now we have two people who are sick, or am I going to offer them this God and this solution? And the reason why God got me sober was not to get a nice job, not to get the relationship, and to acquire stuff. It was to get me in spiritually fit condition to stand by the door, as Sam Shoemaker said, and wait for the next one coming in. Whether they got one day, no days, or 30 years, I need to be prepared. I stand on the firing line like our big book says. We stand on the firing line. But like any good soldier, infantryman, if you're on the firing line, they draw fire. So sometimes when we have a big book and we're standing by the door, we're going to get the cats and AA. So there they go again, them and their big book. Those AA, I can't believe they call them Nazis. What a horrible word. But that's how they refer to cats with a big book. We're going to draw fire. Let them fire away, because I have something called armor. It's called God. That's why he got me sober. And so when I'm convinced that my way doesn't work, and I know without even putting it down, if I sit in prayer, where those things hurt. It was my mom. It was the sexual stuff I got put through as a kid. It was being afraid of my dad. I loved and hated him at the same time. I felt like a complete failure as a young fella coming in here. All my friends had jobs and careers, were married, and I'm sitting in my 7 treatment center. I remember when my brother got married, had asked me to be his best man, and I was in Hastings, Minnesota in a halfway house because I couldn't go there. They were okay at the wedding. My other brother was the best man. They were fine, but I sat in that halfway house just sick. What a loser I am. That's where it hurts when we walk in here. That's where it hurts when I'm not even using anymore. I haven't had a drink or any other mood or mind-altering substance in double digits, but it still hurts. There's something that needs to get repaired here. I don't even know what it is half the times. But inventory will reveal it to us. But I need to make a decision to get there. I don't know how many meetings I've been to where somebody yells out, I don't know how it works, but I know it does. I want to screen page 58. It says how it works. Next question, you know. It also says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. But how many meetings we go to where it should read, rarely have we seen a person thoroughly follow our path? I was sitting in a meeting in South Florida. I had just moved there. And a buddy of mine took me to this meeting. It happened to be a beginner's meeting. And the speaker finished sharing. It was a go-around. And about five or six people shared on ways to get sober. It was like multiple choice. Joe said, don't drink, go to meetings. Mary said, I just write positive affirmations like that guy Stuart Little on Saturday Night Live. I'm a good person. I'm a wonderful person. That, all these different remedies. And I nudge my friend Artie and I says, Artie, if I was a new guy, how do I choose what to do to stay sober? I just heard a whole potpourri of ways to get sober, everything but what the book said. So we can hear a lot of different remedies and get more confused when we hear them, when we walk in. So I'm grateful for the folks who told me about this, who said there's more to this than not drinking. I was locked up a bunch of times. I didn't drink, waiting to see the judge. I wasn't sponsorship material, you know. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous during my first 6 months, I was going to meetings. I was on every kind of spree you can think of. In fact, I even developed this eating disorder, which I didn't want to tell anyone about, because I thought eating disorder was a gender issue. I thought only women suffer from eating disorders, because that's what I would hear. What kind of man are you to have a binging and purging thing going on here? No matter what I ate, I had to come up, and I kept seeing myself in the mirror as I was this wide. It's got to go. I'm losing weight, and all I can do is secretly go and purge, and I gorge. Because I was still dirty in here. I felt dirty in here. And what came out was the relationship with my mom and how I had to come to terms with, as much as I adore this woman, I'm angry with her. How could you commit suicide and leave? I understand now, but then I didn't understand. The being molested sexually as a kid, that left me dirty in here, feeling dirty in here. That wasn't being processed. I had to smother and get comfort the same way I did with the drink. And then it all had to go. And someone gave me up. They dropped a dime on me to my sponsor, because no one was getting this one. I never forget, my sponsor did this. He says, meet me on the corner. We're living in Brooklyn. We got to do a 12-step call. So Mr. Gung Ho puts on his AA armor, goes out there. And I tell him, where are we going? He says, follow me. And he did this. He went from very basic to very deep. We walked up the steps, and I'm sitting in a Weight Watchers meeting. He said, what are we doing here? He said, you need to learn how to eat. We're going to start with that. I know all about it. Then he took me. I had no idea my sponsor was going to OA. And he took me to an OA. I felt completely out of it. I'm telling you about, I'm really an AA member. I don't belong here. That's what I'm doing. I did that for a little while. Then he sent me to Al-Anon to deal with the mom stuff. And then the icing on the cake was, if you want me to sponsor you, you need to go into therapy. You need outside help with this. I said, but Tony, I'm an AA. That's the cure-all. He said, no, it isn't. You need to sit with a therapist. And I reluctantly went to a therapist. His name was John Collins. I'll never forget him. He was a godsend. And I walk into therapy and I tell him, listen, I'm a member of AA. My sponsor, I was as Brooklyn as you can get. He said, listen to me for a minute. I don't really belong here. I think this whole thing, therapy, is a crock. Sick people. This is what I'm telling him. But my sponsor in AA says I need to be here. And all he did was this. He nodded. I says, he told me, I put all the blame on my sponsor, to write down on paper what I'm supposed to talk about. I was as arrogant as you can get. And I says, my mom committed suicide. I'm always afraid of my dad. And I was sexually molested. He nodded. He says something like, how did your mom commit suicide? 5 years later, I'm still in therapy. He just kind of put a little hole in the balloon and boom. Every Wednesday I'd go for 5 years. And I started out with contemporary investigation. And somewhere in there, I began to heal because I needed outside help. I was talking to someone earlier. Some of us need to go to outside help. Some of us need to be on medication too. That doesn't mean you're less sober. Some of us just need that stuff. And follow according to plan. It was a great thing I did for myself. And it was part of me, as I'm kind of bridging here, to turning it over means I play by someone else's rules. And at the time, it was my sponsor giving me direction, and I was going to follow him even when it got uncomfortable. So how it works is rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And we're about to get a new director in our life. It says, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to a simple program. These folks are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. It says they're such unfortunates, they're not at fault, they seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Am I a man or a woman who lives with rigorous honesty? Or do I pick and choose when I'm going to be honest? And the part of this that is so important, honest about my condition, I'm alcoholic. And I will cause a traffic jam being the only guy on the road. I'm an alcoholic. I will drink unless I'm spiritually fit. And I come in here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and now I'm sober, but it hasn't gotten much better. So I need to take this journey inward to uncover and discover the things that are blocking me from this power called God. Because my relationship with God is not about acquiring knowledge. It's about a seeking a transformation, the spiritual revolution, where the old statues come down and new ones are put up. Begin to operate from that place, to be disciplined to a spiritual life, yeah? And the only thing that really matters here is willingness to be changed. It talks about having grave emotional and mental disorders. We have to have the capacity to be honest. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought folks they were talking about grave emotional and mental disorders was the folks who had grave emotional and mental disorders. Some of the folks need to be on medication for the head. And I remember thinking how wonderful our book is. They're talking about folks who have other issues that need to be on meds, they have grave emotional and mental disorders. That doesn't apply to me, though. And I'll clean up the language. My sponsor says, yeah, it does. You're an alcoholic. You have a grave emotional and mental disorder. You're an alcoholic, which means you have a mind that'll take you back to that which is killing you over and over and over again, and it will kill you. That was my grave emotional and mental disorder. I have the capacity. We have the capacity to be honest. To be honest, to be synonymous with truth and God. We have the capacity for that. We don't have to build it. I have a Starbucks coffee here. I don't know how many. We'll say there's 8 ounces of coffee in there, yeah? If I left it here and came back next year, you probably couldn't drink what was in there. You'd probably get sick, especially if I took the cover off. It would be dirty. But the cup is just a year older. And what I would need to do to go over and pour a fresh cup of coffee was empty out the contents, rinse it out, and then fill it up with the soft drink. We have the capacity to be filled with the Spirit, but I need to empty out first, which is exactly what 4 through 9 is about to do. Am I willing to do this walk? Am I willing to play by someone else's rules, play on terms other than my own? Because I'm loaded up. When I came into AA, I would hear a lot of folks talking about this hole in the soul. I feel empty. And I'm reaching out there to fill up this hole in the soul through food, through money, through sex, whatever it might be, just to feel okay. The hole in the soul is really, I'm full. But it feels empty. I'm full of resentments and fears and belief systems, attitudes, ideas, unresolved trauma, all of it. Trying to reach out there thinking external conditions are a remedy for what ails me internally. And so when you put all that together, I feel empty. I have this huge hole right here. And so what needs to be done in actuality, it needs to all be flushed out. And as it gets flushed out, I suddenly come to terms with the aha moment, oh my God, I have God. It doesn't mean I speak for myself, I'll ever be perfect. I'm broken. I'm flawed. That's my going around condition. I'll never be perfect. I'll always be flawed. I'm the car that leaks oil. You know the car drives away, leaves an oil spot? That's me. The window squeak, the door squeak. That's my getting around. I'm broken and flawed. There's something from Scripture that says, I'm weak flesh, sold unto the slavery of sin. The things I want to do, I don't. And the things I don't want to do, I do. I get hijacked. And if I don't act it out, I'm getting hijacked up in here, knowing it's not a proper thought. What do I do with that condition? Because I'm not drinking. I'm not taking any drugs. I'm not doing anything. From outward appearances, it looks like a pretty easy, simple life. One filled with integrity. But in here, it's a mess. What do I do with that? I'm telling sponsees what to do. I'm telling you what to do. And when I put my head on the pillow, I'm not sure what to do. I don't even know the way out of this. Because I got full on stuff. Last night I was sharing, I had the wife, the house with the white picket fence, the two cars in the driveway. I was making some good money. I had all my ducks in a row. And my wife's alcoholic, smoking weed, eating pills, snorting coke, running around with other men, and my life's upside down. And what that outside circumstance did was look at me and said, you, Peter Marinelli, are the loser, not her. While I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And inwardly, I got this turmoil. I'm just twisted up inside. I can't tell you how many times I cried over the phone to my sponsor. What did I do wrong to deserve this? Nothing. It's called life. A buddy of mine says, we'll all have our turn in the barrel. You come home and she says, honey, I'm leaving. You go to work and the boss says, we're downsizing. You come home and you find out our kids maybe are addicted to something. You get a phone call, so-and-so passed. I mean, this is life. I don't have a GPS. I don't have a strength, endurance, or courage, or direction to do this stuff. Oh, yeah? I'll show you and I get drunk. That's what I do. I run. So we're about to change everything in step 3. It says that some of these conditions, I balk. It's not for me to decide what any lunch is going to look like. I can tell you, you know, if I knew what the any lunch was going to look like when I signed up for this, I'd be negotiated on the way in. Because there are many lunches that we go to and say, my sponsor, I can't believe I'm going to do this. I have to pray every day. Like once a week's not enough? Well, God knows what I'm feeling anyway. And I would negotiate until 1988. It says we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful, and if I may add, patient. It'll lay around and wait. every once in a while on the news, you'll see they'll show an investigation. You know, the FBI raided a warehouse full of drugs or arrested these cartel or mafia guys. And they always say, after a two-year investigation, the FBI showed up and they arrested all these guys. And during those 2 years, they were doing what they do. Wiretaps, photographs, and these criminals think they have carte blanche to steal. No one's watching us, and they're secretly recording everything. And when they get enough information, bang, they kick the door open, and these guys have serious problems. Alcoholism works the same way. You don't have to write inventory. You don't need a sponsor. I went to college. I don't need a sponsor. You know, I don't need to pray every day. I'll go to a meeting once in a while. And we kind of move along, thinking everything's okay. And then one day, life shows up and kicks the door open, and we're drunk. And it'll let me play as long as I want, because it's got my whole life to get me drunk. My alcoholism doesn't care. I got sober 31 years. It couldn't care. It is not impressed. A newcomer might say, like I did, wow, that's a long time. Alcoholism just like smirks. I got his whole life to get him. Step one, on page 60 says, we were alcoholic and cannot manage my own life, drunk or sober. See, my belief systems when I got here, well, I'm sober a while, I can take over. Drunk or sober, I'm still alcoholic and cannot manage my own life. Do my actions show I'm managing my life? I can have spiritual beliefs, but I know how I need to learn how to live them. And one of the ways is understanding I cannot manage my own life. I don't mean be apathetic, by the way, and not care, but I'm not in charge. We talk about that a lot in AA. God's in charge, but we're in charge based on our actions. You know, tell the sponsee, you know, God's in charge, and I'm controlling every single area of my life. That probably no human power could ever relieve my alcoholism, drunk or sober, because I always have alcoholism. I've experimented with the human power. It's called heart. It's called money. It's called acquiring stuff. It doesn't work. It's great when I get the new car. I drive up to my house, got the new car smell. Don't even breathe on the car. It's brand new. It looks great. You know, you're dusting it off every day. And I feel like I'm somebody at that point. Then I get a couple of car payments. I forgot that part. And after 6 months, it's like, why'd I buy this car for? So I've experimented with the human power and the external conditions to fix what's in me. None of it works. None of it's permanent. But God could, and what if he was sought? What am I doing to seek God? On page 62, it tells me what I'm up against. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problems. Where are roots on a tree underground? I can't see them. Yeah, the thing I suffer from, alcoholism, can't be repaired with the touch of a human hand, only the touch of the master's hand. And for me, it's not about, you know, working on this defect and acquiring that asset, but having the whole thing ripped out and let God do what God wants to do with it. A complete overhaul. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. I'm selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed. Here's how I operate. Let's not talk about me anymore. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me? This is how I operate. Yeah. Do you ever sit down with an alcoholic and you say, hey, how's it going? And 3 hours later, they haven't shut up. Do you ever sit down with an alcoholic and tell them, oh, I hurt my back. Oh, it happened to me. And they don't care about you. They're telling you about all their ailments. And you're sitting there going, I didn't ask you. I was talking about me. But this is how we operate. It's all about me. Everything, I am the center of the universe, and I think you want it that way. I see things not as they are, but as I am. What we're getting set up to do here, once we turn it over, 4 years, I would look out at the world from the mess. Now I'm about to look in at the mess. That's me. When a book says we're prepared to look at it, our life, from an entirely different angle, we're getting a different point of view on everything. You know those traffic guys who tell you how the traffic is? You notice they're never in a car with you or behind you or in front of you? They're always where up in a helicopter looking down a different angle. we're about to get uplifted and looking down on our life and going, oh my God. Different people, different states, different ages, different circumstances. I'm the common denominator through all of it. The way I behaved at 10, I'm still doing at 40. I keep meeting these crazy women, one after the other. My sponsor says, maybe they were crazy, but you kept finding them. When is about time that you say, maybe I'm the problem? My sponsor always says, you keep finding these birds with broken wings your whole life. So I have to take a look at me. My third step is on page 62 and 63. The prayer is an affirmation to live a certain way. This is the how and why of it. I had to quit playing God. Why? Because it didn't work. That's what it tells me. It doesn't work. Step four is about to show me what God is and what God isn't. I discover the truth by uncovering the lies. I get to see how I've been playing God in every area of my life and the things below the surface that were marinating, that were driving me to be who I was. I don't write assets in step four. If you do, that's what you do. I don't do that. That's not what my book tells me to do. It's about looking at the things that are causing me and others pain, the things that are driving me constantly, and all of it comes down to fear. It says, I decided here and after drama life, God's going to be the director. He's the boss. He's the principal. I'm his agent. You know, the agent works for the principal. Like movie stars and athletes all have agents. They represent that. LeBron James has an agent. And he goes around to all these companies, comes back to LeBron and says, listen, I got four offers. Which one do you want? He says, yes and no, because he's the boss. My book is telling me that we're agents for God, meaning, watch this, we represent God. Oh boy. How are we doing? How am I doing with that? That's what it tells me. We're representing God in all that we do. I'm not equipped to do it yet, but we're about to put on some good armor here and load up the tool belt. It says he's the father, we're his child. Most parents are going to care for their kids, nurture them, love them unconditionally, and give them what they need, not necessarily everything they want. And stand in front of the bullet, if you will, because that's what they do. When I took this position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Being all powerful, God provided me with what I need if I keep close and perform his work well. If I do, it'll happen. If I don't, it won't. And it isn't because God isn't delivering, I'm not listening. Established on his footing, I became less and less interested in myself, my plans and designs, and more and more about what I can contribute to life. I went from page 62, where it's all about me, to 63, where it's beginning to be more about you and less about me. Am I willing to live along those lines? I'm not the most important person in the meeting. I used to think I had to be the wheel. I'm settling and okay with being a spoke. God's the wheel. And then we have a third step prayer, which is an affirmation. It's really interesting. Take a look at what our current difficulties are, what bondage we're currently in. I'm attached to money. I'm attached to a relationship. I'm attached to the neighborhood I live in. I'm attached to my car. My job is who I am. I'm a partner in a law firm. That defines me as a man. I'm a homemaker. That defines me as a man or a woman. Whatever. No, it doesn't. That's living from the head again. It says, God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. God, you take me like the wretch I am pretty much and build me up as the way you see fit. There's something called shadow side of our soul. And that's the part of me that does not know God. Shadow side of my soul is the part of me that does not know God. And that's where all the fear is. That's where my self-reliance is. That's where it's marinating. And step four is about to put a light on that. Actually, God's about to put a light on the shadow side of our soul. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, love, and way of life. May I do thy will always. My sponsor had me write out the prayer word for word as it appears in the big book and had me break down each sentence and put it in my language to give it some depth and weight for me. That's different type of language. I offer myself to thee to build with me as thou wilt. I didn't grow up speaking like that. So what does that actually mean? What does take away my difficulties mean? And once I did that, what we did was we got on our knees, held hands in the third step prayer together. And we didn't work a good third step for 6 months. We immediately, because it says next, we launched out into a course of vigorous action. Step four. Now, surprisingly, when I was new, I didn't notice this. There was no amen at the end of the third step prayer. So Bill didn't leave it out. There is one at the end of the seventh step prayer. Yeah? What we're about to do is go into that back room that we never went into, but it's a walk. God's going to take us by the hand, like children, and take us back there. And I am a child in front of this presence. I get into trouble where I think I can be on my own and I'm not a child in God's eyes. That's awfully arrogant of me. So God's going to take me back there, and it's a movement, decision in three, inventory, discussion, look at defects of character, surrender once again, and at the end of the seven-step prayer, that's closed with an amen for now. And what we're about to do in eight is begin after this list to go repair all the damage I caused. So after the third step prayer, I start on this course of action. Step four. It says many of us never attempt it. So quick mechanics how I did step four. And it hasn't changed. My sponsors gave me a little spiritual tool. And across the top of the page, I wrote, "Thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral." And we pray and we get still and we begin to write. And when we're done writing, we give prayer thanks and put it away. And how that came about was Mr. Big Shot here does his first fourth step. I'm like as sharp as a bowling ball. I have no clue what's going on. And I sit down to write inventory. Now, I was living in an abandoned building. I was filthy. And I come into AA and I'm living in this nice little cozy apartment. And I sit down to do my fourth step. And I look around and I says, "I should vacuum the rugs." Yeah. Right. There were bugs and critters all over the hallway, but suddenly I noticed a little lint on the rug. I should vacuum. And then I would do that and sit down to write and say, you know what, AAs, they're always drinking coffee. I'm going to make a pot of coffee, and I'll really go through the night. I had coffee. I looked like a crackhead trying to write inventory. Then I would be hungry, so I'm going to eat a little something, digest my food, watch a little TV. Then I'm going to get to that fourth step and fall asleep. Then I pick up the pen and say, well, that's not that important, and start to edit what was going to go on the paper, and then I just stop writing. And sponsors do what sponsors do, and how's that fourth step going? And I would lie and say, it's going okay, but he's a sponsor, and they usually know when we're lying. He's, where are you up to? What column? And when I paused, that's when he knew I was lying, because I was trying to think quick. And I told him what was going on. Again, I'll clean up the language. But he says, you turned everything over to God. Why aren't you using God to do a fourth step? He says, well, we're going to start off this way. Thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral, because on your own, you can't. You will lie and manipulate. He says, I want you to take a couple of beats before you go into meditation, then meditate, then pick up the pen. And lo and behold, I started writing. And I was living in this little apartment in Brooklyn, and there's a famous bridge called the Verrazano Bridge. And I had this bookshelf that I made into a desk, a little, about as wide as this. And I'd sit, and I on this little nightstand that someone gave me, and I would see the lights on top of the Verrazano Bridge as I was writing. And there was something very safe about that, like as if God was just watching me. And I'm new, and I'm writing. And what I did then, I do now. I make a master list of names, people that I'm angry with. Some tension. It says we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. My book is not asking me to be perfect here. Lord knows I'm far from perfect. I'm broken and flawed. This is not going to be, you know, the poster for how to do an inventory. The point is I'm willing to make an effort. I'm willing to try to get better. So if you're out there trying to write a perfect fourth step, you're not doing it right. You're writing the fourth step. Let God write the fourth step, because we'll quickly find out how the pen becomes a spiritual translator. And so I started: mom, dad, brother, aunt, uncle, cousins, and so on. The bully in the third grade. The high school coach who cut me. And all this stuff was coming up. And I had a master list of names. And the last two names I put down is me and God. I was living with me and just as much with God. He should have fixed mom. He should have done this. He should have, and he didn't. So I put that down: principles, institutions. Principles, ideas. A woman's place is in the home. Children should be seen and not heard. Real men don't cry. Don't drink, go to meetings, put the plug in a jug. I was brewing with this one. Put that down. All my fears, same thing. The fear inventory, why I had them. And the sex inventory, conduct. So I have these names. I get a notepad, turn it this way. I put down mom. Second column, cause, why I was angry with mom. One sentence, why I was angry with mom. Mom was alcoholic. Mom committed suicide. Mom was weak. Dad, he was a gangster, didn't know about sports. He intimidated me all the time. My brother, perfect. High school, college, perfect wife, perfect house, perfect job, perfect money. I hated him. Yeah. My other brother went to Hollywood to be an actor. That's what I always wanted to do, get involved. I was a musician. I wanted to be in the entertainment field. He's pursuing his dream. I'm doing a fourth step. With me? And so on. Same thing with principles and institutions. So I would write down. It wasn't about, you know, I'm mad at mom because she was alcoholic. She was a really good woman, great mother. She brought us up. She took me to baseball practice. I don't know what happened to her, but somewhere along the line she got sick. They're not asking for that. One sentence. And then third column. What it affected in me, the seven areas I write down. And then rubber hits the road in column four. Because our book says we're going to disregard what the other person did entirely. Where were we at fault? The book acknowledges in two spots in step four that other people may have done things to us. See, a lot of folks come in and say, yeah, but look what they did. The book acknowledges that. Sometimes we just got involved in a drive-by shooting. We got that. But in order for me to heal, I have to push them aside for a moment, because most of my life has been, if they didn't do this, I wouldn't have done that. And it's killing me. Where was I? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And here's what goes on. At some point, there's a shift. The entire inventory is about fear. And the people I'm really mad at the end of the day, is me and God. When I look at the inventory, live life forward and understand it backwards, and I'm looking in at the mess rather than out from the mess. Why didn't God fix my life? And why did God have these bad people in my life? Then I get into the fourth column. I start to see what I did to set the ball rolling, how I pursued this, how I kept it going over and over and over again. That bullying in third grade when I was 8, I'm 50, and I'm still seething thinking about this guy. I will not let go. What inventory shows me at the end of the day was the first three columns. Now follow me on this. These things happened. We saw them happen. We had a certain perception about them based on where I was at. But a lot of the things in my inventory turn out to be one lie. Because this is what I do. I'm walking out to the lobby there, And Sean's coming in and accidentally bumps into my shoulder and keeps walking. I'm a little disturbed by this. It's only 9 o'clock in the morning, but I'm an alcoholic. And I said, what was that about? He bumped right into me. At 10 o'clock, I see you having a cup of coffee. I said, you know what Sean did? He pushed me against the wall before. In about 6 months, his name comes up. I hate that guy. How come? I went to a meeting. He beat me up in a lobby, took my car, ran away with my girlfriend. I don't understand what's going on with this guy. Have you ever noticed when you first come in, we tell a story. We tell our story at a meeting. And then 10 years later, those events are there, but we look at it completely different, with more understanding and seeing like how many things we really were responsible for. There's a shift in perceptions. Now, that doesn't apply across the board either. Because when I was about ages 8 to 10-ish, I always referred to this guy as a distant relative. And this guy started out talking to me about girls he was dating. And as a young boy, 8 to 10, back in the 70s-ish, it's a little different now. But part of me was curious, but I was also kind of icky about hearing that. I wanted to be Mickey Mantle back then. I had no time for girls. And then it escalated to telling me what he would do with these girls. And he says, let me show you. Yeah. And now I'm under this guy doing what he wanted with me. And warning me the terrible things that were going to happen to me if I told anyone. So around 8, 9, 10, I'm walking around with this thing, despising myself, and the age of innocence was over. That's one of the things that really happened. And I wrote out this inventory. And when I got to the fourth column, it says, where are you at fault? I said, well, hold on a second. And I call my sponsor. You ever been so angry that you're crying at the same time? And I'm on the phone with my sponsor, and I says, Tony. This is my first sponsor, Tony. I says, Tony. Tony from Brooklyn. Who would have thought? And you know, in my family at Christmas time, if you holler across the room, hey, Anthony, 15 guys turn around. It's unbelievable. Where am I at fault? I was, you know, a child. And then he said something that was priceless. He says, forget where you were self-dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. He said, I want one question to ask you. How long have you been hating this man? And the obvious answer I gave him. And he says, that's what's killing you. You don't have to love him. You don't have to like him. You certainly have to break bread with him. But for you, your any lens right now is you got to get off the hate. You will never be free. And if you're not free, you will drink again. Easier said than done. And then I began asking God for a spirit of forgiveness towards this person. Never seen him after that. And then I got to a point where, because the soul is the soul and God is God, forgiveness. It's not a part of me anymore. It happened. So did a lot of other things. It just doesn't own me anymore. That's called freedom. As a Catholic, I grew up, and I would hear a lot of stories growing up. I grew up, you know, with these mean nuns walking. There was one nun, she was about 6'12". She had one of these big bells, and they were allowed to hit you with this paddle, you know. I used to go to something called catechism, which meant you're prepping to do something called communion and all this. And they were a little rough. And I would, as I got old, I would go to Mass occasionally and not go, critique the priest when he would give a homily, take everyone's inventory, then I wouldn't go, and back and forth like this. And I would openly and willingly gossip about the church and participate in those conversations and mock it and things like that. But I'm coming here telling you, but for the grace of God. And I'm doing a fifth step. And in my fourth step, I had institutions, Catholic Church, and all my reasons why with me. Sit down with the sponsor, I'm doing step 5. and I get to institutions, and I read to Mickey Mussard, who's my sponsor in Colorado, Resentment Catholic Church, cause, and he says, hold it, which is another way of a sponsor saying you are now in trouble. He's, how long have you been nursing this one for? And I push right back, well, Mickey, he says, since when have you had the luxury of nursing a resentment? Have you forgotten you're alcoholic? And again, I push back, with me? Then he said this to me. He says, you go to AA meetings? I said, yeah. He says, every AA meeting a healthy meeting? I said, no. Are there 13 steppers in AA? I said, yeah. Do people take 1 and 2 and 10-year chips loaded? I said, yeah. He's, but you keep going back. I said, yep. And you practice love and tolerance and forgiveness and acceptance for all these places and bring a solution. I says, yeah. He's, how come you can't do that with your church? And then I got quiet because I had nothing to come back with him with. He says, it sounds to me when we get to step 9 that you need to go make amends for this stuff. Not denying some of the obvious things, but you need to make amends. When I got to step 9, we have something called confession. You go in there, you sit with the priest, gives you absolution, some prayers, and off you go. But I went there and I said, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is what I've been doing and saying. Now, when I was growing up, usually the priest would say, are you sorry for what you have done? Pat you on the fanny, give you some prayers, and off you go. They very rarely got into a conversation when I was a kid. This one said, I understand. And he began to talk and elaborate on some of the things I was sharing with him. And I knew something was different about this. And part of 9-step is, what can I do to make it right? And he says, can you, this is a Saturday, so can you come to Mass tomorrow? I said, I can do that. And the following day, Sunday morning, I went to Mass. Now, in the Catholic Church, we do a little exercise, aerobics. You nail, you sit, you kneel, sit. Up, okay, I'm up. And I found some thing going on in there that spoke to the soul. And about 3/4 of the way through, we do the Lord's Prayer. And I felt like I was here. 300 people saying the Lord's Prayer. They sing it, but it's the Lord's Prayer. And Marion was with me, and I can't look over at Huck because I'm weeping, because I finally made it home. And I've been going ever since, and I'm a member of my church and a member of Good Standing. I give service there. My point of all of this is we will write inventory. It is so vital to get free because the things that God's giving us, we're not even aware that some of these items are going to get us free. I can write an inventory as thick as this big book, and there might be one piece of inventory, this church thing, that opens up the gates of hell. I just don't know which one it is. And I will never know if I don't write and share. Because part of step 5 is the house cleaning process. Writing and discussion. It's the same thing, two different movements. Well, it's not the same thing. It's two different movements. One, we write it out, and one, we go discuss. And if I didn't do that, I'd still be sitting in here telling you how much I love God, but never going to his house for an hour on a Sunday to say thank you for this life. What a hypocrite I was and how blind I had been until God walked me through the darkness. That's what one of the things that came out of my inventories. Because getting the grace of God, I have found that doesn't equate to spiritual fitness. But for the grace of God, my job is to have an experience with that power that's giving me grace. And I'm still jammed up with me. I'm still full of me until I complete 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And I don't even know how free I'm about to get. The point is, I know I'm going to get free because you are. The sponsor is. How free do I want to be? Go to an ocean with a thimble. I come home with a thimble full of water. I did fear inventory, all my fears. Fear of dying, fear of poor health, fear of having no money, things like that. Fear of failing in life. And I'll just do this and we'll take a break. The things that come out of step 4, we don't even know going in. When I was about... Pardon me, I was about 15, 16 years old, and like I said last night, you hang out on street corners, rebels without a clue, but there you are hanging out. And every once in a while, the fire department would be driving down the block, or they fill up their tanks from the fire hydrants, or you see them going into a grocery store, and they get off the truck. And some of these guys were intimidating, big guys, and they got the helmet and those big boots, and that can be intimidating. I was petrified. I was more afraid of them than the police when the police rolled up. And I couldn't, why am I so afraid of these guys? I'd see the truck pull up, they'd get off the truck, and I would shake. I didn't understand what's going on with me. Move on with life. Do an inventory. When I was around 3 or 4, I lived in a town called Red Hook, Brooklyn. And it was a fire house maybe 5 blocks away. And very often, you'd hear them rolling down the block. At the time, this is like 1963 maybe, 64, there was a poster. It was in support of the fire department, and these firemen, what a great job they do. And it was this kind of gruff-looking fireman on a ladder with a little baby in his hand against a building that was burning. Get it? Now, the idea was he's saving this baby from a burning building. Don't they do a great job? At that age, I interpreted it as, these guys are going to take me from my home away from mama. And they're scary looking. So now I'm 15 and 16, there they are. They're taking me. They're going to take me. Mr. Tough Guy, you see a fireman, uh-oh, be on your best behavior. Something that silly was still plaque on my soul. And getting to share with another man what happened to me when I was 8 to 10. Getting to share with another man in inventory how angry I was with my mom. Did sex inventory. Big Book doesn't care what we do behind closed doors. They're looking at conduct. Am I taking advantage of people? Am I lying and things like that? Trying to arouse jealousy. You know how we can manipulate to get what we want. That's what they're looking at. You know, what I could have done better, put her in a car and send her home rather than doing what I always did. And not having the self-seeking motive all the time, like radar, that brought harm to people. That's what they were looking at. And we can do that while we're in AA. Same guy, just sober. Same woman, just sober. But the old play, ways to play are still there. That stuff kills me and harms others. And so I put this all on paper and shared with it. The first time I went to do a fifth step, I was hoping my sponsor got drunk, that he wouldn't show up. You know, up until that point, I thought he walked on water, had a fifth step appointment. I'm not sharing anything with this guy. Who is this guy? But God gives us what we need to suit up and show up. He looked bored through most of it. He took notes from time to time, which I still do. And he would say, you shared something when you were 10. We're over here at like 25. It's the same stuff going on. Do you see that? He shared some of his things with me, some of the events in his life, so I didn't feel so alone. And he said to me something that was so important. If there's a name for it, it's already been done. I shared some things with my sponsor. I thought he was going to look at me less than. He left. He said, that's it? I wasn't alone. And we get to see God's handiwork when one drunk sits with another and unloads this stuff for fun and for free. See, you can't buy the soul. God's not for sale. But something happens in this altruistic, even charitable work that we can say we do here. I need to lend assistance to Joe the newcomer or Joe the old-timer just from the soul, because soul meets soul. If there was a pay involved, it would never happen this way. And we get to live in that light, yeah? So when we come back, we'll do 6, 7, 8, 9, and we'll see where God takes us. That's all I got for now.